Welcome to the Love and Light Podcast,
powered by 103.9 WDKX,
with your hosts, Lovely Warren and Willie Lightfoot.
This is the Love and Light Podcast.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. This is the Love and Light Podcast. I am Willie Lightfoot.
And this is Lovely Warren.
And we are the hosts of the Love and Light Podcast, where we lift up the people and things we love and talk about the things that people don't talk about at all or nearly enough. Welcome back to the Love and Light Podcast, powered by 103.9 WDKX. Before we get into this, we like to tell our listening family that we encourage you to download the WDKX mobile app, where you can listen to our podcast on the app. You can even text or call the WDKX frontline number at 585-678-1039. Tell us about how you feel about the show. Give us new topic ideas. You can also use the open mic feature on the app to leave us a message about the show or, you know, tell us about maybe one of the things you want to see on the Love Lifting segment. This episode, episode 7, as we're finishing our State of Black America, is about the state of guns in Black America. The state of guns, Lovely,
yes,
in Black America.
And today, before we get started on that topic, we want to talk about our Love Lifting segment. And I'm just telling you, bro, the girls are killing the game.
Whatever.
We killing the game,
respect,
okay?
Though. Respect.
So, you know, our very own Deja Fair just got drafted to the WNBA from Syracuse University.
That's dope.
We are so very, very proud of her.
Dope.
And you know, she repped the city.
Yeah, she repped did. The city. She had when a little flower on at the
flower.
WNBA
draft. Yes.
It was dope.
Yes. And so, and then, you know, the Bayou Barbie from, you know, LS from Louisiana, she got drafted as well.
Yes.
And so the girls are just killing the game. Mm-hmm. We're so very, very proud of them. Mm-hmm. But we want to, in our Love Lifting segment, lift up all the women of the WNBA. Because we know many years ago, there was not a WNBA, right?
That's right.
And one of my favorite movies, Love and Basketball, you know, it sort of played that out and raised that awareness and raised that issue with a lot of women having to go overseas to play. But one of the big things now is the pay, right? Women in the WNBA are not getting these not getting paid like the men in the NBA.
Well,
so
they don't want to pay them. Why do they don't want to pay them? No,
well, because you know what? People haven't been going to the games and things like that.
Oh,
and
okay.
So we really have to support them.
Sure.
If you want to support the support the game, support the league, and you know, make sure that they're getting the income and the support that the men get, so that they can have the pay that they have.
Mm. Episode 26, the Love and Light Podcast. Just finished our Love Lifting segment. This segment is number 7 of a 7-part series where we're talking about the state of guns in Black America. Now, the last show, just to recap a little bit, we talked about the chitch. Now,
yeah,
I don't know, did you get any feedback? I got some feedback on that. They said it was, you know, people said we was right. They said we was right on it. We hit it on the nail. And then we also teased last show that we were going outside the studio and we were trying to figure out how that was going to look, but we actually did that. We went outside the studio. We went out to the annual locally here African-American Black Heritage Gala, which was very nice, by the way.
Yes, it was very nice. And WDKX was honored for their
50 years. That was
Paul Boutte, who's been on the radio
and
you know, Gospel Hour for over 25 years, a big a person in gospel music here in Rochester was honored. You had a number of artists that are out there that were honored in all fields. You know, some people have already gone on About Time magazine owners.
The Blunts.
The Blunts was locally honored.
Yep.
So there was a number of different people honored. Danielle Ponder, as well as
Danielle doing her thing too.
Yeah.
She got another album.
I'm telling you, the girls are winning.
Oh, whatever. Guys, we gotta step our game aside. We gotta step our game up, man.
Rena Golden, yes. So they had
Rena,
some
great work too.
They had some really big support and, you know, honors to those people that are in the arts and deserve to be recognized.
So we was outside. We pulled up on this young man, Chaz McKinney. We pulled up on this young man. He's from our neighborhood. He's from the West Side. We pulled up on him. It was nice to see that they brought a lot of youth from the art centers. And he was one of the youth that came from the Woody Lightfoot Equity Center, which was named after my father. And he was there. And we pulled up on him, you know, Love and Light outside the studio, pulled up on him. And we asked him this question. And this was his response.
Like, what's your feelings about, you know, the state of black young men right now?
Right now, I feel that we definitely can get better. But, you know, it's a lot of them that's been going through a lot of phases that think they just could do anything they want and been getting them to a lot of trouble.
What you think of some of the things that the black young men like yourself, what do y'all need to help y'all to be successful? Like, what do you think is lacking?
I think what is lacking is more of, we could get more community service, really, because we definitely need more people to tell us how to actually guide through all this, because I feel as though that we all feel as though that how can we make a change when no one's there?
All right. Well, I mean, I was like, wow.
Yeah, it was deep.
Yeah, I was like,
wow. It
was
really deep that he shared that, you know, basically they talk about, meaning him and his peers, they're talking about what's expected of them.
And he looked like he was, like, maybe in his early 20s?
Yeah. It had to be about
really
early
young.
20s.
Yeah, right.
And what's expected of them and the fact that they really feel like they don't have an example or proper guidance.
They feel abandoned.
Yeah.
That's how I feel like a lot of these young men, they feel abandoned. And when we think about that, especially when we talk about guns, in black America, we have to look at some of these statistics. And when we look at these statistics about firearms, black youth are more than 11 times likely to die from firearm homicide. Hispanics and Latino youth are 2.5 times more likely to die from firearm homicide than their white peers. Between 2011 and 2020, black youth had 39.6% increase in gun suicide.
That is deep.
That's staggering, right?
That is, I mean, it's touching because, you know, we often, and on our show, we've often talked about gun violence and the work that Rock Against Gun Violence is doing here locally in Rochester under your leadership.
Now let's back up, because I think a lot of people don't understand that work, right? And the Rock Against Gun Violence Coalition, back in 2018, when we had a extremely low homicide rate, historical low homicide rate. You were mayor at the time. Came to you with that idea. We talked about this before. Created that. But then as a result of that, and big up to the current mayor too, Mayor Evans, who continued that work, right? We brought the Brady National here, which is a huge gun advocacy organization, right? To do the truth behind guns here, crime guns here in Rochester. So they did the gun trace data report for Rochester, which Rochester is only one of five cities that has this type of report.
Right.
There's California, there's New York City, there's Chicago, and there's Pennsylvania. They're the only other cities.
So LA and California or Seattle? Or San Francisco. Which city in California?
I'm not sure which city it is, but I know that these cities are all larger than Rochester as a mid-size. So we're the only mid-size city that has such, and we know the crime problems we've heard in Pennsylvania. Like, let's look at Philly, right? That had over 700-800 homicides a year. We know Chicago is like off the chain, right?
Yeah.
So when we think about how this data, which by the way, it was done for free, didn't cost the taxpayers a dime, which by the way, when we look at this report, I want to just give you just some key things that came out of that report, but it's staggering, some of the data.
No, I know the data is staggering, and the information about the number of, you know, we often talk about how many kids die by homicide, by shooting homicide and things like that. But, you know, with the statistics that you just gave about suicide, how many children are utilizing these guns now in suicide, really?
Yes.
Because when I was in high school, one of my friends in the ninth grade committed suicide with a firearm. And so that's just saying to parents that, you know, we talked about the state of Black children, Black women, Black men, and letting them know that, you know, our children are now utilizing these weapons to also commit suicide. And so they have to be very, very careful. And the suicide rate, especially since COVID, has really gone up in our community. And so we also, you know, you got bullying and all those things. We talked about social media and those effects during this 7-part series. And that's the really the reason why we wanted to get outside, right?
That's right.
We're giving a lot of information. We're talking to talking about this information on the podcast, but really want to go outside and talk to the community. And, you know, it's funny that we're talking about gun violence and we're talking about this because I ran into a woman in London at the Delta Sonic. I was getting my car cleaned and she's like, oh, I've been waiting to see you. Right. And I'm like, oh, and I knew her when she was little.
Right.
And I ran into her mom and she said, well, I'm a part of an organization and, you know, you may not like this, but you know, my politics might be a little bit different than yours. And I'm like, well, what's going on? She said, well, as it pertains to guns. And so she's part of a Black local group that advocate for gun ownership, gun rights, and teaching people how to use guns and all of that. And she said, so I just feel like the way that things have been done around you know, done around gun awareness and, you know, limitations in New York State. And she just came back from North Carolina, moved back from North Carolina. She was opposed to it.
I can understand. I respect that.
Yeah.
But see, let's be very clear, though. You know, and then back up for a second to what the statistics say. The concentrated firearm homicide is linked to urban poverty, right? Which is linked to inequalities. And I'm going to come back to what you're saying because I think this all ties in. Segregation and racism. Black and Hispanic Latino youth are exposed to multiple fire homicides at a rate 20 times higher than their white peers. Let's be very clear, though. On the suicide piece is attached to the poverty piece, is attached to the social ills piece. On the piece of everybody having a right to bear arms, I am a licensed permit gun holder. But I'm the chair of Rock Against Gun Violence Coalition. So I'm not anti guns. I'm anti people killing people with guns that are being trafficked into our cities disproportionately due to the racism and instructional institutional inequalities that we have going on in our community. And that's important to distinguish that, because licensed gun people aren't the ones that's killing people.
And that's the point that she made.
Exactly.
She said,
I agree.
But then I was also talking to somebody else who about the same issue, sort of, when we talk about gun ownership and all that, and how easy it is that even that those people that are carrying weapons illegally, right? And she was like, "Well, what's an illegal weapon?" You know. So we going back and forth. It was a good discussion,
right?
You know, could be legal gun owners, right? So, you know, what is the community? And I think that this is something that Rock Against Gun Violence should look at, about how we educate the community, not just about the gun violence, but about how to actually own a weapon legally, right? Because all those people, we talk about the Second Amendment right? Right to bear arms. All those people that a lot of them, especially that's over the age in New York State, that there's strict requirements in New York State. There's legislation and all those things that you have to go through. But those people that are over 18 that are being arrested, say, for having an illegal weapon, are we educating them in our community about how they can become legal licensed gun owners?
I think that is part of the education, right? But when we're talking in specific regards to the crime guns, right, there's a difference between the legal guns and people owning them and the education around how to own them and the disproportionate way that people are getting that are getting denied owning guns. That's a whole nother issue, because there's a lot of us people who are able to get guns and are being denied, and a lot of racial stuff is involved in that. But let's be clear about crime guns. Out-of-state gun dealers represent 57% of crime gun recoveries. New York State gun dealers represent 43% of all crime gun recoveries in Rochester. That's in the report, right? Mm-hmm. So among the top 30 crime gun suppliers who sold the most crime guns, Monroe County gun dealers had the highest percentage of crime guns at 53%. So let's just break this down into the local of what's happening here mm-hmm. in our Monroe County mm-hmm. in Rochester, New York. Majority of the crime guns, over 53% of them, are coming from local gun dealers here in Monroe County. And there are no gun dealers in the city of Rochester. So what does that mean? They're coming from the suburbs.
Right. So my question is, how did those people that utilize this particular weapon mm-hmm. or allegedly utilize this weapon in this particular way, how did they get it?
So
a lot of them, was it sold to them directly, or was it at one point legally owned by, you know, a person that, you know, that might have, it had got stolen out of their home or something like that?
All of the above. So what they're finding out is that a lot of these guns, and many of the gun dealers are doing a great job. Let's remember, there's only 10% of the gun dealers, and that's all of that you'll find in that Brady report. Only 10% of the gun dealers are really causing 90% of the problem, right? Mm-hmm. So on the supply side. So what we're seeing is straw purchasing. Now, straw purchasing, just here locally, it was national news years ago where the firemen were killed in Webster. That was a straw purchase. That gentleman was not able to buy a gun, a mm-hmm. rifle, but had someone else went in, bought the rifle, gave it to him. That's, or sold it to him, or he got it from a person that legally bought the gun. Mm-hmm. That's called straw purchasing. A lot of these guns are making it on the street through straw purchasing. Somebody legally bought the gun and then they sell it to someone else. That needs to be traced. And there are gun dealers who've done that. Typically, a lot of times they've seen that trace and they haven't been properly investigated or properly sanctioned or et cetera. And they continue to allow to be able to go into business. Then it's the ones who have guns. A lot of them are stolen from legal gun owners. And then there's the education around proper gun storage too, as well, right? And proper reporting of your gun being stolen as well, that's not being properly enforced, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other one of the gun dealers who consistently keep getting robbed. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of these gun dealers, let's be clear, they're not the Grangers. They're not all major stores. These also, I bought my gun from a guy in his home. Mm. He sold it out of his house. He was a licensed gun dealer.
Okay.
And there are a lot of licensed gun dealers got gun dealer shops in their garage.
Okay.
In their homes. Mm-hmm. And some of these people claim they got robbed.
So did Brady find that those places are regulated?
That's the thing. And that's what we're really, really working hard towards, making sure, first of all, that all of the data is public to the public. The TART law is a federal law that doesn't allows them not to have to share all of the gun information, ATF. But yes, they know the data, but they're not, a lot of these gun dealers only get inspected once every 10 years.
Interesting.
That's not enough.
I think that is definitely something that, you know, you guys through the Rock Against Gun Violence is looking at and mm-hmm. has to continue to look at.
Right.
But I also think that London's point is something that is very important as well.
That's right.
Because I think that what her point was, like, hey, you know, we can have legal gun owners mm-hmm. and a lot of the people that may get caught up with owning, you know, for safety reasons, whatever, mm-hmm. An illegal weapon could be mm-hmm. a legal gun owner if they went through the right process. And I don't think that yeah. that's talked about enough, where the process of how do you go about becoming a licensed gun owner in New York State. And those laws and those rules have, you know, gotten stricter over time because of the amount of crime and other things that have happened with guns. And so I think that process of application and where do you go to get an application, because based on the Constitution, everybody basically has a right to bear arms, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the Constitution of the United States mm-hmm. gives people that right to bear arms, right?
That's right.
And so, but states have regulated mm-hmm. differently mm-hmm. how, you know, you are able to even exercise that right, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the examples that she gave was like, she's like, when I was in North Carolina, you know, I just filled out a form and, you know, waited a period of time and mm-hmm. I was, you know, given my license, sure. right? And, sure. you know, and I was able to go into Target and wherever, and it's open carry, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. you getting something off of the shelf, mm-hmm. you know, people are open carry. You could be in Georgia sitting at a restaurant and, mm-hmm. you know, people are in there with open carry. Mm-hmm. And it would be interesting to see, and I don't know if they look at that data, where states that have less stringent mm-hmm. rules around
have less homicides
have
less
left homicides have mm-hmm. left shootings. I don't mm-hmm. know that data, yeah, but I'm just you. Saying that mm-hmm. that I'm saying that that's something that maybe we should look at yeah. But to educate our community and the folks in New York State on what's the regulation in New York State around being able to become a legal gun owner.
Episode 26, the Love and Light podcast. We're talking about the state of guns in Black America. And the reason why we're saying Black America is because we know that there are disparities when it comes to us. Because what I hear, Lovely, oftentimes, and I get these calls from people, that friends of mine, you know, they know that I'm a licensed gun owner. They may ask me to sign their paper or for their permit application, et cetera.
So when you are going to get your permit, mm-hmm. what typically is the process?
So what I'm saying is people go through that process, but then I get calls that they were denied. They were denied. And a lot of them don't have a felony. They've never done nothing egregious or whatever. And so the I agree with you that we need to educate people on, because the process has changed. It's mm-hmm. changed from when I got one 20 years ago or whatever mm-hmm. to now, like my son applied for his about 2 years ago, and it's totally different. There's in New York State, there's more educational things that they have to take now. There's more okay. classes that they have to take okay. now, which I think all of that is good. But maybe one day we'll come back. We'll do a part two. We'll talk about the process. You know, maybe yeah. maybe that's who we pull up on. Maybe we pull up on the clerk's office and ask them to break down the process to us. But there is a process. But when they go through that process, what I'm hearing oftentimes, especially from African-American, more so males, is that oftentimes when they do apply, because judges make this decision on, you know, if they get it or not, that sometimes they are they're denied. And then mm-hmm. then there's a process of applying, but then I think also needs to be explained too is a process of how do you appeal the denial, and then are there the data that also would be nice to see is what are the disparities in different nationalities and different people compared to African American denials to other you know, racist denials, I think would also be interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if that data or anything is tracked, but I mm-hmm. think that, you know, what London brought up is very important for us to get to know and understand as a community. How, you know, how do you become a legal gun owner mm-hmm. in the state of New York? What does that process look like? Mm-hmm. And educating our community on doing that or connecting them with people that know how to go through that process so that people understand, yes, there is a Second Amendment right. There are some things that you need to do in order to exercise that right, right?
Yes.
And go through the process to do that. And I think that that's not, you know, and I recognize the challenges that, you know, people have in with gun violence and all of that in communities and all that. But doing the right thing in the right process is something that we need to go through and we need to inform our residents about.
Also, you can go on to the City of Rochester. You can go on YouTube and click City of Rochester City Council. You can watch those sessions that were about the truth about crime guns in Rochester. And I know that this is something that's happening all over the country. And I agree with you. Not only do we have to look at with the impact of crime guns and on how we can advocate against that, but we also have to look at how do we have equity around gun ownership and making sure that we're not saying that, you know, owning a gun is a bad thing, you know, because it's not. All right. But when those guns get in the hands of bad people and people do bad things with them, then that's something we have to work towards stopping as well, too.
And understanding, definitely understanding the process on top of that.
Yes.
And connecting people with how to go about getting their license the correct way in whatever state they may be in. Mm-hmm. Every state has a process that you have to go through. And so let's just not carry, you know, don't just go to the easiest route, right? Do the right thing and go through the process of getting the weapon, getting your license the right way. And so this is Lovely Warren. I want you to dance like nobody's watching, sing like there's no one listening, live like it's heaven on earth, and love like you've never been hurt. On our next episode, we will do more outside of the studio. You'll hear more from our residents because we're going to be talking to them about this 7-part series out in the community. And so we may just stop you and say, what do you think?
We're going to pull up.
So be prepared.
We might pull up. And this is Willie Lightfoot. Remember to keep your light shining. You can't put a lampshade on the sun. So let your light keep shining. Be encouraged. Be blessed. Peace.
Thanks for listening. And if you have any comment for the hosts, you can use Open Mic on the WDKX mobile app or call the WDKX frontline at 585-678-1039. Thanks for listening to the WDKX Podcast Network.